The swift and breathtaking decline in Florida's citrus industry continues apace, but new farming methods and new research shows promise. This is Florida Matters.
Support for Florida Matters comes from the Hospitals of BayCare Health System, providing more than 100 health seminars, classes, and events each month. BayCare's mission is to build a healthier Tampa Bay. Register for a complimentary health seminar, class, or event at BayCareEvents.org.
From the Donna Studio at WUSF Public Media, I'm Robin Sessingham. The disease called citrus greening has wreaked havoc on our state's most iconic industry, and Florida is harvesting the smallest citrus crop in 52 years. State and federal dollars have been pouring into frantic efforts to save groves. Some of the efforts seem to be paying off, but is it too late for some growers, especially the small family farms? Here in our studio to talk about what's happening out in the field, Florida Citrus Mutual's CEO Michael Sparks. Florida Citrus Mutual is a cooperative that represents the interests of the state's citrus growers, and Mike was just inducted into the Florida Citrus Hall of Fame. Congratulations and welcome.
Thank you very much.
Dr. Harold Browning of the Citrus Research and Development Foundation, that's the organization which has oversight over greening research efforts. Welcome.
Thank you.
And Scott Young is a citrus grower from Alturas. He's the third generation that's worked in the citrus business in his family, and he's on the board of the Polk County Farm Bureau.
Thanks very much for having me.
You're quite welcome. Welcome. So, Scott, I'm going to start off with you. I want you to tell us, how big is your farm right now?
Right now, well, we originally topped out at about 400 acres. Now we're down to less than 100 because of the inroads made by citrus greening.
Yeah, so what's it like to be a citrus grower right now?
It's the citrus grower that is my size is in very choppy waters. The cash flow is the problem. We don't have anything to combat the bottom line, and that's what it's all about. And the disease is horrific in that it takes away your whole cash flow in a year, 18 months, is just a whole different operation. And the healthier trees that are remaining are still viable and productive, but if any tree had any kind of problem, disease, anything wrong with the vascular system of the tree, they're already gone.
So you said you're at one quarter of what you were, a few years ago?
Absolutely. I'm more like about 15% from where I was because some of the groves have died.
Have you sold off hundreds of acres?
Yes.
To people who are going to develop
people.
It?
No. People mostly from South Florida, some growers, but more than likely it's going to be somebody that wants a ranchette, you know, so they can retire and have their horses and stuff. So I think it's mostly going to be on the ridge around Bartow anyway. It's going to be 5-acre ranchettes out in the country, and there's going to be a lot of those available.
Mm-hmm.
And another big plus is there's these huge wells out there. So it's set up to farm. We just got to think outside the envelope and paradigms and start doing something else. My ancestors left Georgia with a boll weevil. They were a monocrop industry. The boll weevil came, they came to Florida.
It was cotton that they were farming in.
Yes, absolutely.
Was that your grandparents? Or?
That was my great-grandfather and my grandfather. They lived outside of McRae, Georgia in Telfair County. Mm-hmm. And just one day, they'd heard about this awful thing coming in from the west, and it showed up, and it killed all the cotton. So they packed up and came south to what was the wilderness.
So you kind of feel like this is part of the farmer's lot, I guess, then.
Nobody promised you a profit when you started farming. You know, we look at weather maps, you look at Mother Nature continuously, because you're not really in charge. You just adapt to what happens.
So Mike Sparks, when I spoke to you last, I think about a year ago, things were looking very grim indeed for the citrus industry. Has anything changed? Do we have any bright spots now?
You know, I think we really do. It's a most difficult time. It still continues to be a crossroads for the Florida citrus growers. It is difficult to grow, raise, and make a citrus grove productive. And yet, there's some good signs. The crop is down, no doubt, 50% of where we were. But last year, the crop was down not nearly as much as it was the year before. That's at least some encouragement that we might have bottomed out or soon will bottom out. Some of the research that has concluded and ongoing has provided some additional tools for the grower to combat the psyllid, the bug that takes the disease from tree to tree. And there's some encouragement on the tree itself, whether it's additional nutrients and new rootstocks on the way. It's not going to be the same citrus industry as we know. You're going to see more trees per acre, higher density. As mentioned by Scott earlier, the production costs are at an all-time high record, 2-3 times where we were prior to Honglong Bing.
Honglong Bing is the technical word for citrus greening.
Greening, yes. Mm-hmm. You'll hear greening, you'll hear HLB or Honglong Bing. It's the same devastating disease that is just a disaster for the Florida citrus industry. So some positive things that are available, and growers that have to make a total commitment financially as well as good agricultural practices, that's what's going to make it for the Florida citrus industry.
What are you seeing from growers? Are you seeing a little more optimism? I would imagine you're seeing a lot of citrus growers selling because it's been several years now of no profit.
No doubt it's a financial issue for the small, medium, and the larger growers. But the fact of the matter is that we have the perfect soil, the perfect climate, generally the perfect weather conditions to grow citrus. A lot of other agricultural products don't grow well in our soil. Not all growers have the opportunity to sell their land to a ranchette or development. We're talking the Florida citrus industry that encapsulates some of 32 counties, small rural areas right through the heart of the citrus industry. There's not really the opportunity to sell their land, and so they really need to dig down deep, as difficult as it is to reinvest back into the citrus industry.
What I hear you saying is they've got nowhere else to go.
You know what? There's few options. There's only so many peaches that is kind of a specialty crop for Florida that we could grow, or the blueberries. But the best return, when we can beat greening, this would be the perfect crop to reinvest into the citrus industry.
All right. Dr. Harold Browning, you are with the Citrus Research and Development Foundation, oversight over research. And I keep reading, there's no cure in sight. Should we, at this point, forget about a cure and put efforts into keeping trees that already have greening as healthy as possible and producing oranges?
It's a difficult challenge, a really complicated disease system involving, as Mike said, an insect that transmits the disease, as well as a perennial crop plant that once you plant it, it's many years before you get production and start to see some profitability. It's hard to imagine a cure, what many people want to call a silver bullet, that if applied could just turn things around. And we really don't anticipate that now or in the future. So instead, we're really building kind of a long-term transitional management system. The business plan for research started with what can we do right now to help growers keep their trees as healthy as possible to withstand the onset of this disease. And that's proper nutrition and irrigation, things that growers have done over time here in Florida. All of these are more critical in the presence of this pathogen because it weakens the tree. And so you have root diseases and cold weather and so on that cause insult to the trees. And on top of that, with greening, it's a real challenge.
The tree's weak.
Right. Mm-hmm. So the research approach, as Mike said, the nutrition and irrigation, the cultural practices that have been the mainstay of Florida production are being tweaked. Many growers have been under modified irrigation nutrition programs now for 5 or 6 years, and that is leading to some optimism that perhaps the tree can withstand the disease better when fully capable in the hands of the growers. And it means more frequent irrigation, sometimes daily nutrition, small doses, kind of just-in-time approach to keep those root systems as healthy as possible.
So the trees are living. I know years ago we heard it's a fatal disease, period. And I've even heard it compared to HIV in humans, which, you know, I hate to downplay a horrible human disease, but compared to it in the sense that it might not be cured from the HIV virus, but people can live healthy lives for years and years, and they're thinking, well, maybe we can't cure HLB in the citrus industry and the citrus grows, but the trees could live and produce for years.
I think that's a reasonable analogy. And the history of this disease around the world is that it's not a acute killer of trees, but rather a chronic decliner. And so the approaches that are being taken, both in terms of grower practices, but also in the research itself, is give that tree a little bit of an edge. We're working with bactericides. When applied to the tree, can reduce the level of bacteria in the tree. They don't cure the tree of the bacteria, but a lower level of bacteria may, in fact, cause less injury, or perhaps we can get below the threshold that the disease doesn't exert itself in the tree. So that's an approach. In terms of plant genetics, the breeding programs are working to come up with a more tolerant or resistant tree that, even though infected, would not show the disease at the level that we're seeing now. So all of these are kind of incremental efforts to support the health of the tree in the presence of the pathogen.
And keep the industry alive until a cure is found. Let's step back one second. You were talking about the bacteria in the tree. Basically, what happens is you've got this tiny little flying insect, call it an Asian psyllid. It carries a particular kind of bacteria. So it's not a virus, it's
correct,
a bacteria. And then it infects the tree with this bacteria, which gets into the vascular system that carries water from the roots up into the leaves. Is that a good way to put it?
Yes. And the vascular system that the bacteria live in also move nutrients from the leaves down to the roots. And at this time of the year, when the fruit are maturing, the stored nutrients, the carbohydrates in the tree, are mobilized up into the fruit. So plugging of that vascular system is one of the symptoms of this disease.
Okay. Well, Mike, you were talking about citrus being so important to Florida's identity. There's Wisconsin cheese, there's mm-hmm. the Georgia peach, and there's Florida citrus. I mm-hmm. mean, there's a sentimental reason why we care about citrus, but mm-hmm. is there a practical reason? Is there an economic impact on the state that people who aren't farmers like Scott should care about?
Absolutely. Even after 10 years of frustration in battling greening, the fact of the matter is Florida citrus still creates 62,000 jobs in the state of Florida. That's down from 70-plus thousand jobs, but it's still 62,000 jobs, $10 billion of annual economic activities generated from Florida citrus. And if you think about it, we've got to be able to grow our fruits and vegetables. You know, we have 1,000 new tourists that are becoming Floridians each and every day. We need to provide the nourishment, a food source for them.
One of the concerns also is that the infrastructure is starting to die. You need an infrastructure for a Florida citrus industry, the packing houses, labor resources, processing plants. And if you don't have the product to support the infrastructure, then the packing house is going to go out of business. When you bring back the oranges, where are the packing houses?
Oh, absolutely. That's a good example, because a packing house on fresh fruit, critically important to Florida and Florida citrus. But take that up to the next level, a processing plant, which in the past would run 24 hours, 7 days a week during our peak season, and now is running basically 8-hour shifts. So if you lose a processing plant, that's not going to reopen. You look at the processing plants, the packing houses.
That's an expensive thing to build, a processing plant.
Absolutely. And then take it down to some of the local communities, the tractor salesmen, you know, the gasoline, the hardware. It just has that trickle-down effect, which all in all is a staggering $10 billion number each and every year that generates jobs.
Mike couldn't be more right. The ripple effect off of this industry, we're talking insurance people, tire salesmen, fuel salesmen. The list goes ad infinitum, because it's all, you know, working together to produce the product, and the product is just not there anymore.
Interconnected, especially in the rural areas.
That's really the truth. And I'm from Bartow. It's the hub for Polk County as far as agriculture goes. I'm serving on Farm Bureau Board. And also for the U.S. government, I'm a contractor that I go to the groves that have been in the tree assistance program, an aid program provided by the Department of Agriculture that's very, very good. It helps a lot, but it's bittersweet, because I go to all these groves that I saw as a boy, and I go back to them now, and it's barren. And it's just your home's gone. It's like almost like strip mining. It's just the view you've had of my home place forever is forever altered.
And there's a lot of abandoned groves, apparently, which is a big problem in the spreading of the disease because maybe they were sold off. 20 acres was sold off during the housing boom, and then we had the housing bust, and now they're sitting there as breeding grounds for the bug. Go ahead, Mike.
Well, you're right. And if the grower had the financial capabilities, he would not have walked away from those abandoned groves. Many estimates consider there's still over 100,000 acres in the state of Florida total that have been abandoned. And those do house the Asian citrus psyllid and can give a temporary home, if you will, for the disease. But through the Florida Department of Agriculture, there's some growers' incentives, if you will, to try to assist to remove those abandoned groves. We've got to get rid of them once and for all. That's going to be part of the key to get the Florida citrus industry back to the status that they were before greening.
I want to talk about some of those financial incentives coming up. But first, I'm going to take a break. This is Florida Matters, and we're talking about Florida's citrus industry, where we are now and where it's going. We'll be right back. This is Florida Matters. I'm Robin Sessingham. We're talking about where the Florida citrus industry is heading and whether new science and new farming methods are showing promise as of yet. Our guests are Dr. Harold Browning of the Citrus Research and Development Foundation, Michael Sparks, the CEO of Florida Citrus Mutual, and Scott Young, a citrus grower in Polk County. So, Mike, you mentioned incentives. And I want to know where there's been a lot of money, state and federal money, that's flowing into trying to save this industry. Could you just break that down a little bit for us?
I'd be glad to. Now, with some of the research that we have in hand, there are many private, state, and federal programs. For example, some of the larger processors in the state of Florida literally have offered the private sector to the grower programs that would reimburse the cost of new planting. Why would a processor do that? Of course, he's looking for that fruit in the future to be committed to his particular
brand. That money's
brand.
Coming from the processors? I thought the USDA had a program.
Well, there's many programs. The processors in the private sector are in. The federal government that we mentioned earlier, the Tree Assistance Program, last year for the first time, the Fed stepped up and took a traditional federal program that did not include citrus now does. And so there's a reimbursement to the grower to replant those trees. So there's a good example of the federal government stepping up. The state of Florida has stepped up with research dollars that need to be there. And so there's different combinations. A new groves can be planted with some cost share dollars that would help on the irrigation and the water management. So there's federal, state, private dollars. And we continue to pursue some of the real big incentives, like a big tax break for growers taking that expense to plant a new grove, which had to be depreciated over 14 years. Let's get some federal legislation to expense that.
I spoke to a grower recently who was very optimistic because they were replanting some of these greening-resistant trees and felt like from the federal money they were getting to help with replanting, they were going to be able to wait it out until those started producing in a few years. So, Harold, what do we have in the ways? And I said to her, are they GMO? Oh, do not say that word. These are not GMO. These have been traditionally bred. Growers don't want that word anywhere close to their product. But in effect, isn't that what we're doing? Aren't these genetically modified citrus?
The rootstocks and scions that are out under field trial and are being adopted by growers right now are actually the result of conventional breeding. And so, to be clear, they're not engineered. They're not GMO.
It's not done in a laboratory through at the microscopic level.
It is not. And at the same time, the mantra of the Florida citrus industry from the beginning has been leave no stone unturned. So like medicine, like other areas of science, you use all the tools that are available. So parallel development of conventional breeding and engineered breeding are both underway. And at the end of the day, we want a tree that resists the disease, and we will deal with the downstream issues surrounding the need to deliver an engineered tree if that ends up being the case. The American public eats genetically engineered plants every day. They are becoming more and more subject to that, and it's been in place for 20 years. So it's probably something that we have to consider if we're wanting to solve a problem of this magnitude, that we look at all options.
But you're going to be fighting that public relations battle, too.
Well, we're communicating it now, and and there are many people in various locations that are trying to provide the educational background of why this is important at this time.
Scott, let me ask you something about planting another crop. You said you've come from a long line of farmers. You're in that business. I met a reporter who had moved to Florida recently from the West Coast of the United States, and I said, oh, one of the stories you're going to want to follow is the citrus greening, really devastating the citrus industry here in Florida. And his response was, well, I guess the farmers will plant avocados or something. And I thought, you know, it's Florida citrus, you know, but I don't know how important that is. How would you feel? I mean, to make a living, could you plant something, eggplant or avocado or something else?
Traditionally, citrus men have always been cattlemen, too. The old saying was if citrus was low, cattle was high, beef was high, and you could do that. Unfortunately, citrus groves don't allow you to plow in your mistakes every year. We're talking 7 years before you get a viable, productive tree that's harvestable. And I feel like we are some of the last of the old citrus people here because we're the rear guard engaged with the death of a very sentimental and historic industry. It's very bittersweet, and I say this, I won't plant any citrus back until I see more cures on the horizon because I can't afford to wait 7 years on a mistake. And on another embattled front, citrus is now competing, orange juice especially, and grapefruit juice, with the other stuff that's on the shelves in the store now. You have all these blend drinks and energy drinks and health drinks, and sugar is a no-no. So we have gotten a bad black eye, undeservedly so, from the media as far as the juice's health benefits. And, you know, I grew up with the most helpful thing you could do was have a glass of Florida orange juice with your breakfast. Everybody did.
The number I read is that consumption of orange juice is down 38% in the last 10 years. And as you said, not to greening, but to other dietary factors and publicity. But so what are you saying, Scott? You're saying you're not replanting. What are you doing to make a living?
Well, I fall in that intermediate grower category. I can't afford to wait on my money that long. I've got to have some other source of income. So I'd be looking at cattle, possibly sod. And I mentioned earlier the big wells that are on our property. That water's for sale. I'd love to run my well and supply a small municipality somewhere. It would not be unfeasible for the citrus industry to supply Lakeland and Bartow's water needs. It could do it with just existing wells.
That's an interesting point. Scott, you said in an interview in 2012, you said, I love this business. I love seeing that first load of fruit go to the plant. It's a feeling that's hard to explain to someone who hasn't done it. Do you still feel that way?
Agriculture is a wonderful business, and it's very fulfilling because you actually produce something. We used to tell my daughters, we produce orange juice for the babies of the world to drink, and that was literally true. And it's terribly sad because the first thing I remember in citrus was a crisis, and that was the burrowing nematode crisis of the early 1960s. And the freezes, it's one challenge after another. So there were already damaged trees on the ridge. The HLB Wang Long Bing has, you know, put the lid on the kettle, so to speak. But yes, I still love to see that first load of fruit come out. You smell the blossoms. You've watched it turn into young fruit. You've watched the drought go away and the rains come. And then you see it finally going to the plant, and you go, got another one made. I see it's going out, and we haven't frozen, and it didn't fall on the ground. And, well, we're still trying to hang on, and that's a good feeling to see that load go out. Hard to explain, but I think it's a farmer thing.
Say a child of yours says, oh, I just bought 20 acres. Did you say, you know what, go back and get your accounting degree.
Put it into McDonald's.
Mike.
You know, there's no doubt that the Florida citrus growers have challenges and have been challenged there in the last decade. But the thought that taking the existing acreage, the 500,000 acres, and converting that to homes and houses and more cement is just incomprehensible. And the fact of the matter is, no other crop can really step in for Florida citrus. So we're going to get our way out of this, and we're going to work it, and it's going to be a result of research and growers communicating with other growers. This works well. We're going to have more higher density crops, more trees per acre. The consumer is going to be there to enjoy Florida orange juice. Even though our consumption is down, we still drink twice as much as any 100% juice. So there are challenges, but there's still encouragement. The future for Florida is still going to include Florida citrus.
Harold Browning, let me give you the last word, because you've got an overview of the research and where this disease is. In a year, where are we going to be?
I think we'll be one step closer, Robin. The coming together of tools is really what's making the difference. And I've been riding groves recently where growers seem to have started turning individual groves around. The sum of all acreage doesn't reflect that yet, and our statistics don't. But there are bright spots out there. I think a year from now, we're going to know a lot more about the effects of the bactericides that we used in 2016 and will be available again this coming season. We'll have additional rootstocks and scions that will be implemented with all these tree growing programs and the incentives that are out there. And I think one thing that hasn't been touched on, the growers that are growing citrus today are in it to stay. I've never seen better attendance at meetings, at educational events, inquisitive, deep questions about why is this research not leading us where we think, and our organization is driven by growers. And so I hear it every month when we have our meetings. We're going to be further along. We're going to have sidelined some areas of research that aren't productive and focused on others that are. We've engaged the National Academy of Sciences to help do a review of what's been done over the last 10 years and help advise what are the best pathways to solutions. And so I think we're moving in the right direction. And I would hope that a year from now, we'll see a little bit of an uptick in the crop size as well.
I'm sorry, but we are out of time for this show. And we've been talking about the Florida citrus industry with Dr. Harold Browning of the Citrus Research and Development Foundation, Michael Sparks, the CEO of Florida Citrus Mutual, and Scott Young, the citrus grower in Polk County. Thank you all so much for being with us.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you.
You can join the conversation on our Facebook page, or you can send an email to floridamatters@wusf.org. Florida Matters is a production of WUSF Public Media. Our engineer is Craig George. I'm Robin Sussingham. Thanks for listening.